Guy here with a quick message before we get on with the pod. As a thank you to our most dedicated and loyal viewers and listeners to Blood Red, we're inviting you to join our Blood Red Club. By joining, you'll get access to insider transfer content, as well as interviews with former favourites and those connected at Anfield. All you need to do is head to bloodredpodcast.co.uk, enter your email address, and our exclusive content will head to your inbox. That's bloodredpodcast.co.uk. Thanks. Now on with the show.
This is the Allez Les Rouges podcast on the Blood Red channel, bringing you the view from the terraces at Liverpool FC.
Welcome to another edition of Allez Les Rouges in the close season. But hopefully we've been enjoying the Euros. John Coleman is our guest today with Stephen Monaghan. John, as Accrington Stanley manager, have you seen any potential targets in the Euros?
Like that Mbappe fella.
He's a good lad.
Dives a little bit too much though for my liking. Do you know what? I'm starting to scratch my head now with the Euros because I think I see England in a different light to everybody else. You know, I hear these pundits going on. They were raving about them the other night. They'd had two shots in the first half, and it was like they were like Real Madrid from the 63 cup final. It was just didn't make any sense to me. I was thinking, all right, they're playing a bit better because they've improved. And they've got a couple of different personnel who are running with the ball. Does that mean they're playing great? I didn't see it, mate. Didn't make enough chances. They had the Sterling one at the post. They had the goal and they had the deflected cross that the keeper saved.
Yeah. Do you think they look better? I mean, were you flicking between the Scotland game and the England game like most people?
I wanted to watch the Scotland game more. And I'm totally baffled by the whole thing, mate. It's as if I've woke up and I'm on a different planet because I see all the Scottish people celebrating. Everyone's saying how well Scotland played, and I didn't see that against England. You know, and it's always not really any good to them. And they had a chance to go for a win against England because England were particularly poor, and they didn't go for it. They wasted a good opportunity, I think, to get a great chance of qualifying and didn't. And, you know, I think everyone would fancy Croatia to go there and not get beat.
Yeah.
So I just don't get it. I don't get the way people see the games differently from me. And I'm starting to question my own judgment.
Yeah. You think you're in a parallel universe?
You know, if teams don't have a shot on, or many shots on goal, does that mean that they're playing well? Surely the objective of the game is just, it's to create chances, make chances, take chances. You know, have you on the edge of your seats? Have lots of shots, crosses, headers.
Do you think they look better when Henderson come on?
100%. I can't for the life of me think if you're going to play that kind of system, why would you not utilise his drive? You know, it's been outstanding. And I know he's been injured, but it's been outstanding now for a good few years for Liverpool.
Yeah.
And Liverpool miss him, you know, let's get it straight. So I just don't get why limited experienced players are going to be playing ahead of them. I don't get that.
Yeah. Mauro, I mean, have you been enjoying the Euros? I mean, obviously, I mean, we saw Shaqiri, didn't we, the other night, put two in, you know?
Well, that's what he does. Shaqiri comes, plays for these country and scores a couple of cracking goals, but when he plays for Liverpool, he's just an in and out player, isn't he? You know, when he does play for us, he's done some. He's like a cameo effect he has all the time, but doesn't he when he plays for us?
Yeah.
That's about it. That's his limitation, I think. But I watched the England-Scotland game, and as John's just said there, you know, Scotland had a chance to go and win it there. And it might have been a different game, what he could have done against Croatia. But when I watched the Scotland game against Croatia, and I never even watched England. But I thought, like, Scotland had all the passion, but Croatia had the finesse. And you just seen it at the end, didn't you?
Class told in the end, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
You know, with the... I mean, I think what it is with Scotland and England, because it's so steeped in history, I think people see it's the whole tradition of it, isn't it? And they think, well, England are dominant, got a better players, but Scotland put this fighting spirit up, you know? I mean, I think that's what it is, John. I think that's why... that's why the pundits were looking at it like that, you know.
I get what you're saying, but no one laid a glove on each other. You know, there was one booking in the game that happens after 50, I can't remember a tackle getting put in anger by either team. You know, they go on about this passion from the Scotland players. And he looks as though he were a little bit more rough for it than the England team. But neither team put a tackle in. You know, it was you have it, we'll have it, you have it, we'll have it.
Maybe we were just talking about the fans, passion from the fans, you know.
Possibly, but I just think people just, if England drop below a standard against a team that they're expected to win, also everyone wants to think that team's played well rather than England playing poor. And I've seen Liverpool play like that time and time again and draw games at Anfield where the backward sideways, they have 48 passes before they try a wrist ball in the edge of the box. When they're going to be getting the ball back 9 times out of 10 in the next 10 seconds anyway. And we've seen Liverpool draw games, you know, going back a couple of years against Leicester, very, very stale games and, you know, numerous games when they've disappointed at Anfield. It's been a case of they're being stifled and they've passed the ball too much. The other thing is doing my head in, and no one's really mentioned it. I'm the only one who's arguing this point, is the selection of the squad. So for me, I've watched more Premiership football than I have in a long while this year. Don't know why, whether it's COVID or whatever. But for me, one of the best English defenders in the Premier League this year has been the kid from Everton, Godfrey. Why is he not in the squad? He covers left back, right back, and centre half. Why would you not have him in the squad? I don't get it. I just don't see a reason why he shouldn't be in the squad.
Playing for an unfashionable club, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah, but you know, Calvert-Lewin's playing, isn't he? You know,
yeah.
I for the life of me can't understand how Liverpool missed him. Because Liverpool spent ages on that Jamal, what's his name? Lewis. Looking at him for a year. How have you missed him? How has he got under the radar? Because he's going to be a top, top Premiership defender, him.
Yeah. Is there any other matches, John, which you've... I mean, did you watch the Denmark-Russia game?
No.
4-1,
I didn't see that one, but I did watch Germany during the night, the last half hour. And they looked as though they were set out. Yeah. So, you know, you'd be disappointed if you were England and you couldn't say them over at Wembley with a big crowd.
Now they've still got some great players, though, haven't they? Germany, they're just not firing on all cylinders.
They don't seem to be firing on all cylinders. But an England crowd's notoriously big on getting them up for it. I'm not so sure.
No.
You know, how many will be there? 40,000?
I'm not sure, Mono. Do you know how many is going to be there?
Yeah, they've doubled the capacity now. So just under 40,000, I think it's going to be. From the other night, yeah. Same for the semis and a bit more for the final, already.
You'd like to think it'd make a difference, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Going back to that Denmark game, Russia, for me, that was the game of the tournament. You know, especially what's happened with Ericsson, you know, the game before, like, and the way Denmark needed to win and Russia got the penalty and then they were out and then it was a brilliant game.
It was,
for me, that's the best game at the tournament.
Do you think the game that he did collapse and should have finished? I don't.
No, that should have been suspended, shouldn't it? Postponed, you know.
It's quite similar to the Juventus Liverpool game, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I was horrified when it first happened because it just took me back to Hillsborough. You only seen the CPR on the pitch, and I thought, there's no way they can play this game. And then they play the game. But I think, you know, I think the players asked Ericsson, didn't they? But I think UEFA put a lot of pressure on them, but just shows you. UEFA's priorities, absolutely disgusting, I thought.
You know, Schmeichel come out and had a go at UEFA, didn't he? After it, like, making him play. Because Dale Sheeran said, I think he has to play the next night again, didn't he, or something, whatever.
I think he gave them a bit of options choice, didn't he? You know, it wasn't really...
Yeah.
It was like, do you want a Chinese burn or a dead arm, wasn't it?
is that a Kirby... A regular occurrence when you were at school in Kirby, John?
I think it was, yeah. He did half earth them burns, didn't he? Only got the interest.
Yeah. But looking to the to the match on next week, the England Germany. I mean, there's so much hype going on now for the England team, isn't it? It's like, it's like everyone's plotting. I've been listening to radio stations, phone rings. They're all plotting. Oh, we could get Wales in the semis. So they've got to get, you've got to beat Germany first. And then I think, is it Ukraine, Sweden is the next game? But isn't it just typical of England to, like, just overhyped? It's always overhyped, isn't it?
Well, who was it who made the comment about international football? It's just England plants about a bit and then they get beat on pens by the Germans.
Yeah.
I think England will go through. I think they've just got slightly better players than Germany. And if he picks the right formation and the right team, I think that they're good enough. Because
yeah. I mean, the other night, Saka was supposed to be brilliant, wasn't
he? He was good, yeah. I wouldn't say he was brilliant, but he was good. You know, he damaged the ball when he had to, probably more than any other England player has done. It's been disappointing. I know Sterling's scored twice, but I think Sterling's a top player, mate. I'd have him back at Liverpool. But I love the way he takes people on, but for some reason, he doesn't want to beat anyone when he plays for England. You know, he's slipped into that John Barnes mode for England, where he just gets it and plays it back to the middle of midfielder or the fullback.
Too scared of getting booed, maybe?
Don't know. There's a thing now. I was pleased with Gareth Southgate when he came up about football snobbery. Sometimes you got to, and people think the only way to play is have 700 passes and then, try and probe. Prozinetti was the big probe, wasn't he? But I just think that the modern day footballer, the top flight footballer, the demon has a sin to lose the ball. Now, that's well and good when you're just losing the ball willy-nilly. Because Suarez used to do me. He had it when he first signed for Liverpool. The amount of times he lost the ball.
Yeah.
But at least he was trying to do something with it. Players should never be afraid to lose the ball in the final third. It's prime real estate, isn't it? That's where you want to get in. And then you want to stay in there. You don't want to be coming back out. Once you get into the edge, once you get inside the box, you shouldn't be coming out of it of your own volition.
Yeah.
You should be able to get kicked out the box. But players seem to just want to come out now and have that 700 pass to thread one through so someone's side foot into it. Yes.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
VAR, it's hardly been noticeable in the Euros, is it? And everyone's been commenting on how well it's worked. But I mean, there was a penalty the other night which was got it wrong, didn't he? For France. But, basically, generally for the tournaments, it seems to have done, it seems to be using it properly, don't they?
We'll go back to the Champions League games. We see the same there, Peter. It's always better equipped than the Premier League's.
Does that mean our referee and VAR officials? Is that what it means?
It's got to be. Why don't UEFA and FIFA just have the one role on the lines or right through it? Just make it so simple. Now, when you see the games in Europe, you don't have all these thick lines that we have, or different lines, or different, whatever.
I just think you can't be arsed using it. It's like I think it's akin to Newcastle in 1974. They brought Malcolm McDonald and they never used them.
You're a big fan of referees, aren't you, John? But I think the standard of refereeing in the Euros is far superior, isn't it?
Yeah, you would say that, but you see, the referees different games on a whim for me. There's been some ridiculous penalties, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I don't get the way refereeing's going at the moment. It's as if, you can't challenge them in any way, shape, or form. Refereeing infallibility. It's taken over from papal infallibility. you've got this respect in football now. I think you want it to be like rugby union, where you can't challenge them. But it's, that's why you see that gift going out and rapidly falling out of love with football. And you could. And you know what? In the end, when I pack in football, it'll be a relief to not have the amount of bad decisions that you get on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Honestly. That'd be a relief to get away from that.
Yeah. Mono, in terms of that penalty the other night, France-Portugal?
Yeah, you know, for all the good that we just said, that it's been better, you know, than our own VAR over here in our football in this country. But then they send the referee to go up to the monitor and then he gives it.
And he gives it, but he didn't touch him, did he?
No, it was pathetic. You know, it was, everyone could see it, do you know what I mean? And like, I just won't get it after the time. And this is the old age. We've been saying for how long, and you know, VAR is just killing the game. It's, you know, it's, when you see a decision like that once again going the wrong way, you know.
Well, last season when he brought that rule in, how can we disallow a Liverpool goal?
I remember that rule. It seems to change. We have to find a way good to other teams, doesn't it?
And we have to get. We have to find a way to award a penalty.
Yeah. Well, what's this new ruling next year? That's going
to
be.
We have to find a way to award a penalty against them. To this day, you've got VAR, and how we can give that Sheffield United penalty is beyond.
Yeah. But isn't next season they're going to make the offside lines thicker? How's that going to change things? Anyone know what the plan is? Do you know, Mono?
Well, once again, they're messing around with it. They're saying it's for the betterment of it. But only time will tell on that. But for me...
Yeah, or the referees. You might make the referees thicker as well.
Yeah, thicker in the head. But, you know,
presumably the thicker line will mean you can't be offside in that thicker line. Is that right? I don't know, you know.
Well, it's the armpits, things like that. Know what I mean,
you can't score with your hands. So why are hands coming in? That should be the rule. It should be the feet, shouldn't it?
Well, this is going to be a rule.
John?
I just think the easiest thing to do would have been daylight. So if there's daylight between them, offside. And that'd be the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Just like a ball's got to be wholly over the line to get it.
Well, we've got a Liverpool contingent over in the Copa America. Has anyone been watching that? I saw the highlights of the last game where Brazil beat Colombia 2-1. Colombia 1-0 up until the 78th minute. Firmino would come on as a substitute and score the controversial goal. And if anyone goes onto YouTube, you can watch it. But basically, Neymar takes a cross, but it's intercepted, basically. It's the referee. It's the referee. Then goes out to another Brazilian player who crosses it. And Firmino heads it in. But the game got stopped for 10 minutes because of that. So, obviously, the referee was getting in his ear off the VAR people. But he allowed it in the end. I mean, Mono, did you see it?
Yeah, but I thought that was strange because once we all know, if it is the referee, he stops the game now and he just bounces the ball to that team. Yeah. But because it went to another Brazilian player, which wasn't in the direction it was going, by the way. He just let it carry on and then the goal, but then there was chaos then with all the Colombians, wasn't he?
Yeah. It went on for 10 minutes, I think.
Ten minutes,
but it was a good goal by Firmino, wasn't it? Did you see it, John?
Well, I seen the goal and, you know, I'm still a little bit undecided on that. I thought he'd cleared up a grey area there with the ball hitting the ref. It automatically went to the team who lost that possession. Now, I've not noticed games involving us where it's fell to another one of your players and you've carried on. So, I still haven't witnessed them watching it. So, let alone them leading to a goal. I think if it doesn't lead to a goal, it's not an issue. But Liverpool had the situation this season, which I raised with the heads of the referees, the Football League, where one of the players got impeded by the ref and he gave a foul. Well, that hasn't been brought in that. Now, I argue that should be, you should get possession if that happens. Yeah. But there's no rule for that. And, you know, everyone was up in arms when Liverpool got that free kick. And it was directly linked to Liverpool going into the Champions League, wasn't it? You know, winning that game.
Yeah, Mono, some of the other games, Alisson started the first game, but he hasn't been picked for the last two. And then I think Fabinho starts at the first twos, but didn't play the other night against Colombia. So, I mean, they're getting a bit of a rest, aren't they? Do you think the managers, it's Tite, is it? Or Titi?
Yeah, it's Titi Kamara. Yeah, he's just not taking the plays, and you know, for me, when it's good to watch you know, Alisson and you know Fabinho and you know all the rest of the players. And he went to the Euros or Copa America. It's good to watch them play, but when they're not playing, you have this feeling thinking, well, they're not going to get injured, you know, because it happens to us all the time. You know, our players, well, not just our players, but you just hope they all come back not fit and well. Don't you just want to fit for your season? But you just don't want any injuries. It's as simple as that. So for me, sometimes it doesn't bother me when I don't see them playing. You know, to be honest with you.
The bulk of our back four, our main back four, aren't playing.
Yeah.
Trent, Van Dijk, Joe Gomez, and obviously Andy Robertson.
Robertson's out now. Yeah.
Now, UEFA have just brought in, they're going to scrap the away goal rule.
Yeah, I've only seen that this morning.
Yeah, I mean, is that something which, I mean, is it, I mean, we've that's been, like, it's been for years, hasn't it, from what I remember? We've been brought up on it. But, I mean, why tamper with something when it's not broken? I just don't understand it, John. I mean, is that... Do you think it's a good rule, or do you think it's going to, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, Liverpool, not so much benefited it, but Liverpool were always capable of getting themselves into a strong position because of it over the years.
Yeah.
To be honest, it doesn't really bother me because, one, last time I played in Europe, we won 2-1 away and then got beat 3-1 at home against Rosenberg. So, but... Two, I just think if you're going to be better over two legs, just keep playing. Just keep playing. I'd like to go back to a format where it wasn't decided on pens. I know it's exciting and all that, but,
yeah,
you know, when you get teams playing for pens, I didn't really mind the golden goal.
You know,
I know teams got a little bit negative, not scared, but... Without the golden goal, you'd never have that greatest commentary of all time, would you, Jelly on a plate?
Are you going to give us it now?
No, just great, wasn't it? I said, oh, Jelly on a plate. Fantastic. So, but, you know, I just think it's got to be a better way than winning on pens. Having said that, it's better than, as we know, Liverpool with the toss of a coin.
Yeah.
So we have progressed, haven't we?
Yeah, that was it Cologne, was
Cologne.
It?
Cologne.
Yeah.
In the 60s, yeah.
Or toss of a disc, wasn't even a coin.
Yeah. And it got stuck in the mud.
I'm not too sure about the, I mean, we've all been brought up on it, but sometimes, like, say you win 2-0 away and then get beat 3-1 at home, you know, should it be decided on that away goal? I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we have to wait and see what happens with that.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
Another big news item recently is, and it looks like it's resurfaced again, is Rafa to Everton. I mean, mixed feelings. You know, obviously, he was, you know, that night in Istanbul and nearly winning the league and 2008, 2009, he's always been Liverpool folklore. But John, do you think it's, you know, what do you think about that as a manager? I mean, he's a professional, isn't he? He's a manager, but do you think it is taking his copybook, taking his legacy?
He will from the Liverpool fans' point of view, I think, you know, undoubtedly, you will. John, it's a big divide, you know, and you're either in or you're out, aren't you? And, you know, he did improve the team. There's no getting away from that. I still think he has to have a little bit of the blame, a little bit of culpability for us not winning the title when we were clearly the best team in the league. You know, we played negative games where we drew games, which ultimately cost us the league.
Yeah.
And I remember the game where we were 2-0 down against Hull and we got it back to 2-2 and he put a defensive midfielder on because he thought the game was too open. And, you know, we had drawn the game 2-2. And there was just games that season that we should have won hands down and we didn't. And you don't beat Man United home and away and not win the league if they're going to be so.
Would you be taking his image off a flag in the cup then?
Not so much that, but you got to remember the three trophies that we won. We got battered in all three games, and we won them all on pens. Yeah. But we did. Yeah. You know, let's get it straight. West Ham battered us, didn't
they? Oh yeah.
You know, and AC Milan battered us, didn't he? So, you know, but. You know, sometimes you find...
Isn't that a marriage made in hell, though, going to Everton? It's a no-win situation, isn't it?
For him? Eventually, Everton are going to have some success, aren't they? You know, and... Well, let's get a safe. Everton is still a big club. I know I try and take the mickey out of them now and again, but they're still one of the top clubs in Europe, aren't they? Very well supported, very passionate fans. You know, they've been a long, long time without winning a trophy. I think there's only one other team, by the way, since Everton last won a trophy, who have had no success or no promotions or not won a cup.
It's
Oldham. Oh. So Oldham are the only long-suffering fans alongside the Evertonians. But someone's going to get it right. Someone has to get it right with Everton eventually. They're a big club. And
So can't Rafa go to Oldham then?
Possibly, yeah. But I just don't see how you can be, you know, let's get it straight. A lot of Liverpool fans love him. I think more would be in his camp than out of his camp for what he did for Liverpool.
Yeah. And
no one can take away that the greatest night of our footballing lives, Istanbul. Yeah. And he was, you know, he was responsible for getting clawing the team back into that game. So,
yeah.
You know, you got to take your hat off to him for that as well. So if all the Liverpool fans love him for that, it's like a punch in the stomach, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, but what do you think of what the Evertonians who are all over Twitter saying they get send the season tickets back? I mean,
you can understand that from their point of view as well. You know, they see him. He's undoubtedly linked with Liverpool, and he always will be.
Yeah.
Liverpool
for
the Istanbul night. And,
yeah.
You know. They see him as a red, and they see him as, you know, as they've got a red in charge of them.
Is it going to be like Agent Johnson all over again?
Well, what would be in user if we were managing Everton? We'd get them into that championship as quickly as possible, would we?
Well, I mean, what are your feelings? I mean, when it first broke a couple of weeks ago, I think everyone was sick, weren't they? But I think after the last couple of weeks, maybe people aren't as sickened by it.
Going back in our history of managers, you know, I think there's only one that we've all ever disliked, and you know, recently, see, last couple of years ago, Rafa, we took him on board. Let's go back 13 years ago, when at the height of Ix and Gillette campaign, when the SOS was formed.
Yeah.
You know, Rafa Messers, you know, he spoke passionately about how much he loved the fans, and you know, and it was a two-way situation. So the bond was made then when we get rid of them owners at the time, and you know, and obviously we get to Istanbul, the miracle happens. He's a legend, and you know, we've seen the marches around the ground, the Rafa Tolle, do you remember?
Yeah,
the picture of him, you know, and he's embedded in our history, for what he'd done. And plus, as you said, they go back at the time when, you know, the demonstrations, you know, he was at the forefront of all our minds all the time. You know, the battle that he had with the owners at the time himself.
Yeah.
So there's a massive history between Rafa and Liverpool FC.
Mm-hmm.
So when he was going to go there, do you know what? John will allude to this probably. What happens in football doesn't... Now it doesn't think of me anymore. You know, things
like that.
It doesn't surprise me in football. You know, I felt a bit sick, to be honest with you. But because I thought, you know, everyone's saying, you know, he loves Liverpool, the city. He wants to live here. Well, he can live here. He can live in the city. He can enjoy the city. Every time he goes out, you know, the Liverpool fans would love him. And, you know, even to this, you know, the Everton fans probably wouldn't give a stick, you know, this in a stick kind of thing. But now, if he goes to Everton, which is look like on the cards, and then if he does and then he fails, you know, could he live his life in the city again? Because if one side would still love him, but the others would hate him. So, yeah. You know, the environment that he's got to live in then, of that. So, so on the flip side of it, you know, we say nothing surprised me in football anymore. But, you know, obviously he's thought of all this. You know, what could go wrong? You know, and then his position, living in a city would be, you know, wouldn't be terrible for him, would it? You know?
No, but you're right in what you say, though. You know, whatever way you dress it up, he is legends. He stays at Liverpool because, as you say, it was a miracle. And he, you know, he was a very big part of that. You know, mastermind, you would arguably say, you know, with substitutions as well, he masterminded that. So he can never have that taken away from him. Yeah. And he has given Liverpool the greatest night I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Being a Liverpool supporter. I know people will argue that the Barcelona one was running close. You know, especially because it was so special because it was Anfield. But, you know, that was beyond your wildest dreams. And, you know, what he has delivered for us that night is all them text messages that you got at half-time.
At half-time, yeah.
they are priceless, yeah. Aren't they? They are absolutely priceless.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what he's delivered.
John, you're a Liverpool fan, John. So, you know, as a manager, could you ever contemplate, you know, hypothetically, ever managing someone like Everton?
Well, I'll give it an example of this. You know, Anthony Barry's doing really well now at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Can you tell people who Anthony Barry is, because a lot of people might know.
Anthony Barry, you know, he's been on this, hasn't he? He's been on the, you know, the Alain Larouche. He's a massive, massive Liverpool fan. You know, he's been all up around the world with Liverpool. You've seen him. You've seen his dad's here. You know, he's been to everywhere. All his family go. And he's now, he played for me and he was under-16s coach for us about 4 or 5 years ago. And now he's first team coach at Chelsea and won the Champions League.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know, if the opportunity arose, would you go to Everton? He said, well, it's football, it's a job. And I said, you'd never be able to lift your head up in the city. I said, your dad would have to go to ground. It's footy. I suppose, you know, I suppose you could think like that. The one thing I've learned over the years, I'm not having to go with Anthony here, by the way, but people just do things in football and they don't have any thought for the massive consequence that it has on people's opinions. I mean, I've been flabbergasted in the last week. You say not surprising in football. I've had a kit man for 14 years who's decided to leave and go to Wigan. And I'm absolutely done for it. Cracking lad, nicest kid you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
He decides he wants to go to Wigan. So I can't believe it. And,
yeah.
You know, if someone had told me that would have happened a week, 3 weeks ago, I'd have laughed in the face, but it has happened.
Yeah,
things like that happen in football, bizarre things happen in football. And I suppose that people see football now more and more as a job rather than as a vocation.
Yeah, well, a lot of people got upset by Sammy Lee, didn't they? Celebrating with Allardyce, you know. But Sammy Lee was brought up on Liverpool, he's part of our history. But I was trying to explain to people, no, it's a job. That's he sees that as a job, that's his job. Can he get your head around that?
Well, the one thing I don't get my head down is when fans get a cob on when a player who's played for them comes back and scores and celebrates. Now, I must admit, it got on my nerves when Suarez celebrated when he scored for Barcelona. Mainly because I thought we were better in boat legs against Barcelona. I thought we were the better team when we got beat 3-0. I thought that was probably one of Salah's best games. But, you know, you've scored a goal for the club that's employing you now. All right, I know that you say you should have a bit of respect for the supporters used to idolise you, but surely you're allowed to show some pleasure. I've never got a club on when a player who's played for me has scored against me and celebrated.
Mm.
But I've had a nice smile. I say, well, yeah, you know, that's what.
That's
what you play.
That's football. You can say that's football.
You worked all week to score a goal. Why not celebrate? You know, because you were quick to celebrate with them fans. You know, celebrate your own fans now.
Tomorrow.
Back to Rafa. We've seen it with Ancelotti when he lost a few games. The way that Evertonians, a few of them were turning on him, you know, his style of play. So imagine what Rafa's going to get let's hope it's
he's proved it. He's proved at Chelsea that he doesn't care.
No, you know, he was getting booed every time he come out the tunnel by the Chelsea players, the fans, sorry. But then, you know, he goes to win the UEFA Cup with them.
Yeah.
You know, he done well in the league that year with them.
It's a very strange one. I, heart of hearts, I don't want him to go, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to give him any abuse if he does go. You know, I think he's part of our history. He's a professional manager, so he's got to decide himself, hasn't he? You know, hopefully he doesn't go, but, you know.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
Talking about transfer targets, it's very, very quiet on the Liverpool front. We just heard that Grealish looks nailed on to go to City for 100 million. And obviously a lot of Liverpool fans will be like distraught by thinking, oh, you know, City just buying the best players up again. I mean, John, do you see that as like Liverpool working behind the scenes and they come up? Because we never thought Mane was a good signing, did we? Salah, no one really thought they were good signings until, you know, they proved themselves, you know, absolutely brilliant signings.
I mean, City haven't bought too many players for 100 million, have they? You know, how many players have they spent more on than what we spent on Van Dijk? So, they just tend to buy numbers. They buy a lot of £50 million players, don't they, and £40 million players.
Yeah.
And they pay astronomical wages as well. You know,
I mean, nobody's worth 100 million, but do you see Grealish has been a £100 million player? It's crazy.
Well, Peter, where does the financial fair play come into it again?
Yeah.
You know, we can go back to the European Super League, what wanted to get off the ground because clubs were allegedly wanted to get on the gravy train like Man City are because they're just getting away with it. This is what it was all about, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Liverpool. You know, to get on that gravy train. So, where does this financial fair play come into it? Leicester going to sell half, you know, half a dozen of their own players, as 50 million pound players sitting on the bench, getting 20 minutes every couple of weeks.
I like Grealish. I think he's a very, very good player.
Yeah.
But it's just become numbers now, hasn't it?
Yeah. But
one of the big things that you'd have to compete is wages. And, you know, probably when Alden placed himself out of Liverpool with the wage demands. He's thinking he wants what he's worth, and a lot of players are like that now, aren't they? You know, they've got a limited time.
If you don't mind me saying, what's your highest player then? Can you say that?
Our highest paid player would be on about £1,800 a week. But
yeah,
my model has to be different than other teams because if I'm signing a player and the only thing I can tempt them with is money, that's not the type of player who works for Atkinson.
So
the type of player I have to tempt for Atkinson is I want somebody who wants to earn 15 grand a week, not with us, but I'll give them the platform. I'll let them save his time as a plumber to go and take loads of money off households. And that's what you got to look at. And that's the type of player I want to try and attract. Players who are hungry to do well and give me a good year and a half. We sell them. It improves the infrastructure of our club. We move again and get another one. If I'm trying to attract them, aging players with money, you lose that desire. You use that what makes Athletic that spark, that fight, that drive.
So you accept that revolving door, don't you?
I have to, You know, to be honest, if our chairman said to me now, here's 12 grand a week extra on your budget, go and get £3,000-£4,000 players, I'd have to say no. Because not that I wouldn't like players of that ilk, but what message is that sent to the other lads who are going through a ball for me every week? So unless I could put them all up to 4 grand a week, it'd be so counterproductive trying to do it because you disenfranchise 80% of your squad.
Yeah, well, Grealish was linked with Liverpool, wasn't he?
I think he
would be good for Liverpool, but not £100 million.
I mean, no, but Peter, don't forget, we don't pay that anymore. It's nothing to do with us. But they're just numbers, aren't they? You know.
It's monopoly, isn't it?
Well, would it have bothered you if we'd have paid £10 billion for Van Dijk? Wouldn't bother me. Whatever you want to spend, you want to spend.
Yeah.
You just want the best of players playing for your club and the players who are hungry and determined. And, yeah. You know, in the main, we can't complain about our Liverpool players over our lifetime, to be fair.
No. Talking about transfers, I mean, because obviously it's very quiet on the Liverpool front, and in a way, you know, that's the way Liverpool have done it in recent years, you know, Michael Edwards and that. But there's been some speculation. Benfica won Harry Wilson. Does that surprise you, Mono?
Well, there's a few Premiership teams after him as well, allegedly.
Yeah.
But that's surprising for Benfica, really, because, you know, they've got all. He seems to tear out a lot of good wingers in Portugal, don't he? You know, down the line. So to come over here to get one of ours is a bit of a shock, like, but a bit of a, you know, turns your head a bit. But if he goes, good luck to him. He has got to go, hasn't he? You know, you can say he's had his chance, but he hasn't had his chance at Anfield.
Same as Nico Williams, you think?
Well, Nick always played a lot more than him recently, hasn't he?
Yeah. But you know, I think he might be on his way as well, won't he?
Yeah, you know, it's... Well, that's it. I think that's Liverpool. We've got to sell to buy.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be a few more going out the door, obviously, you know, to get a bit of funds in.
John, is Mbappe on his way?
Do you know what I thought? There was a distinct possibility when we signed the deal with Nike that he could be the flagship signing. And, you know, imagine the money they'd make on shirts alone on him. But I think Liverpool have worked on the premise. I think what's your maximum squad in the Premiership now? Is it 25 or 22? Ours has gone down to 22 over age players now, over 21.
Yeah.
But I think Liverpool have worked on a premise that we only need about 17-18 players, and so
we got found out there, didn't we, last season?
Yeah, we had loads of injuries. I'd like us to have 22 top players. We can rotate. When we do rotate, it doesn't damage us a lot. And you look at Chelsea when they rotate, it's hard to tell who their best team is because they've got about 19, 20 top players.
Yeah. It's 25 in the Premier League, John.
25. So yeah. City and Chelsea probably have between them 22 each top players that rotate seamlessly. We have a distinct best 11.
Yeah,
and then we have some coming in. And then everyone, you speak to a Liverpool fan about making a signing. Oh, whose place are you going to take? Now, the modern-day football, that's not the case, is it? No one thinks if Chelsea signs a top player, he's going to take Timo Werner's place because he's taking Havertz's place. You know, they just more ability that you can tweak things, you can change it. It's not so much rotation, it's playing horses for courses. And
yeah,
you develop a stronger squad to go on and compete on all fronts instead of, you know, throwing away the League Cup and the FA Cup and saying, right, well, we're only playing in two.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool to get back to that where, you know, where we compete on all fronts and we have a strong, strong squad and we don't have a drop off from the top 15.
Yeah.
So, you know, disrespect to the other ones who've come in and done marvelous jobs for us this year.
Yeah.
But I'd like better quality.
Yeah. Mono?
Yeah, that's, you know, we've said this in the past, haven't we? You know, City, Chelsea, because of the money that they got to spend, they've got 50, 60 million pound substitutes. So you just said there, they can rotate the teams and you wouldn't know who's missing or, you know, could draw top players. We've got, I'd say, a good, no more than 14 top players, and then we've got the also-rans who are just thrown in here and there, to, you know, to give someone a little bit of a blow when you win it, like 2-3, 4-0, whatever. But we can't get up to that standard because of the money situation.
Someone like Ronaldo, no, you know, he's probably doubled his money at PSG, hasn't he? And are we going to get a replacement for someone like Ronaldo, who was that instrumental really to the setup of the team? We're going to have to spend. 40-50 yeah. million, aren't we? And the wages.
So isn't that false economy by letting Ronaldo
yeah.
go?
Yeah, it seems to be, but
you know, I think he's been a good servant for Liverpool. You have to wish him all the best.
Yeah, definitely.
I do think we have to replace him. And you know, there's one or two good players out there who I think could play that. You might see a bit of a different change of system. But there's good players in the Premiership that you know, sometimes I think the lesser teams have got better players than us. I've had this theory for ages that we don't really seem to recruit well off our Premiership. I know we have in the past with Mane and Van Dijk, but in the early years, every top player we signed at the Premiership just flopped at Liverpool, didn't he? You know, you were getting the best players and they didn't seem to do it. And the ones who seemed to shone were the ones we brought from abroad. So, don't know, you know. You'd like to think that there's loads of players out there who are knocking on the door. What I hope we don't go down the road, which we have done in the past, is signing someone who has a really good, an obscure player who has a really good Euros or World Cup. And then
the perils of the tournament player like Diouf and Babb. Remember Babb? Yeah. We signed Babb for after the World Cup.
You sign him on the back of that. And it's dangerous, isn't it?
Do you
for sign before the World Cup?
Well, you got to remember, is international football is totally different from club football.
Yeah.
Just the tempo of the play, the patterns of play, it is a bit sterile. And some players can excel. You know.
So going back to that international football, we have to wrap up in a minute, but. I'm just looking at the fixtures. The semi-finals are on the 6th and 7th of July. So our next podcast will probably be just after that. And then the final is on the 11th of July, which should be about the time of our next podcast. So have we got any predictions for the semis or even the final? John, who do you expect to be in the semis?
My prediction for the tournament is Ronaldo will score another pen.
Brilliant.
I think, you know, you look on paper, Portugal have got a very strong squad, haven't they? Belgium have got a strong squad.
Yeah.
Italy being a team.
Italy look like a Premier League team, don't they, really?
Yeah.
You look exciting, Italy.
Marlo, can you see anyone going past France? I mean, France are obviously the favourites, aren't they, but...
Yeah, I'm going to go for Italy, you know.
Yeah.
I just like the way they play. They're attacking and the midfield defence. They've got a good unit together, you know. It's a totally un-Italian team that you watch, you know. But maybe Germany, Italy final.
I'd like to see Italy do well because just the way Mancini dresses. He's always got the best suits on. You've been listening to Ali LaRouge. Thanks to John Coleman and Steve Monaghan for joining me. And hopefully in a couple of weeks' time, we'll have some signings maybe. You never know. Either way, I'm really looking forward to the season. And we'll talk in the next episode about fans getting back in the ground. And anything else to say, John? Any other thoughts before we leave?
I think Kelleher's signed a new contract, hasn't he? The goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Interesting to see his development because it's hard to get past Alisson, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it might be interesting whether they don't put him out on loan for a year.
Okay, thanks, John. And Mono, before we go?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Liverpool play a pre-season game at the Wham Stadium, I think, wouldn't it?
It would be great.
Let's get it on, John.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, thanks a lot for all our listeners all around the world. Appreciate the feedback. And see you in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks to John and Mono. Allez le Rouge.
You've been listening to the Allez le Rouge podcast on the Blood Red Channel.